And Julie actually went to a farm.
I went to a farm.
And met the sheep that the wool roving came off
We took the wool, and then Nancy hand felted an entire... I'm wearing like 3 or 4 layers on that dress. There's the wool felting that you did by hand. There's the satin underdress, right? Yeah. And then there's the...
The
main lace. The lacy part on the top. So I hope you're going to post that photo, but it would take us an hour just to describe how she made that overdress. It's amazing.
Just when I thought you guys couldn't get dorkier, I went and met the sheep that made my costume for me.
Welcome to Nerd Burger, episode 31.
31. Yes.
31.
Yes.
21 plus 10.
Oh, jeez. We've run out of that. We've run out of things to talk about. Who are you?
What?
Who are you?
I'm Mike.
And I'm Craig. Oh, how you doing, okay. Mike? Jeez, how do we open every episode?
I was waiting for you to ask me how I was.
How are you? I did ask you.
I'm just as good as I was when you asked me that like 15 minutes ago.
Okay. So do you have anything you want to, do you have anything you need to inform me of before we jump into the meat of things here?
No.
No? No banter up front? We're dropping the ball.
We made the mistake of having that banter off the air.
maybe you can splice it in, do some extra editing. No?
No.
Probably not going to happen.
Hey, we have guests.
Yes, we do. We have two guests.
Two?
Yes.
Where are they?
Her name was Leia. She was
They're on the internet with us.
Excellent!
There you go.
I love that song.
Yes, this is the song that was the conduit through which I came to know you. Because I had never heard of the song before. This is Richard Cheese singing Star Wars Cantina.
Oh my God, you're right. I totally forgot
Heard this on the internet. I mentioned it to the person I sat next to at work. His name is Gerard. And he's your husband.
He is.
And he mentioned, oh, I have to tell Julie about this. She's a Star Wars fan and a Barry Manilow fan.
I am.
At the Star Wars. Okay.
So we have Julie and...
And Nancy, who has no previous affiliation with the song.
Yeah, I think that I'm alone in my Barry Manilow fixation. I can handle... I'm okay with that.
I think there's plenty of Barry Manilow fans out there, but I think there's a pretty small Venn diagram of Barry Manilow fans intersecting with Star Wars fans. A little tiny overlap, and yeah, Julie lives there.
It's a narrow sliver where they overlap.
I do live there.
But we've got the two of you on, and we'll get to some of this in a little bit. We've got the two of you guys on because you're big costume nuts.
We are.
In cosplay. Do you call it costuming or cosplay when you talk about it?
Costuming, definitely.
Okay, we'll get to that because I think we probably have some other little bits and pieces to discuss here. But got the notes taken care of there, Mike?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
I was writing down that it is not cosplay.
No, it is, but that's what some people call it. We'll get to that.
Okay. We have a lot to say on that subject.
Excellent, because Mike has nothing to say on that subject. Okay. Okay, he says a little bit. All right, we'll believe him. Do you have news or anything, Mike?
No.
Anything to talk about?
No news. Do you have news? That's a yes.
We'll talk briefly about Breaking Bad, and this isn't going to spoil anything. This works well because our two guests have not watched the show, and they will want to watch the show now that they hear about some of these storylines that were abandoned.
You know, or as soon as they put Barry Manilow on those shows, I would probably watch them.
Like digitally insert him into a meeting with Gus Fring. He could be the guy at the other end of the X-Acto knife.
Does Barry Manilow like fried chicken?
I don't think so.
Who Who doesn't like fried chicken? Come on.
Barry Manilow. Weren't you paying attention to the podcast?
Okay, abandoned storylines, is that?
Yes, because the writers in these shows, they bandy about a whole bunch of storylines, right?
They sit around in a room for approximately 4 months before they come up with the arc idea of the season. For one episode.
And right. And they bounce a whole bunch of different ideas around. And do you want to hear some of the ones that they decided to drop? To make the best show on television ever?
Let me think. Yeah.
Remember when Hank was getting minerals delivered when he was recuperating from his gunshot wound?
Yeah.
And he's kind of becoming really irritating.
What do you mean becoming? Well, he had already achieved irritating at that point.
When he became the most irritating character on the show. And Marie, his wife, is all worked up. They discussed an idea of where Marie is concerned that the cartel is going to continue to come after Hank. So she arms herself and accidentally shoots the delivery guy.
The UPS guy?
Yeah, no doubt with a purple gun because of her color scheme.
It takes one in the clipboard.
Right through the clipboard into the chest.
Yeah.
What else did they have? Hank and Walt. That's stupid. Well, the idea of Walt actually ending up in prison in South America for a while, like he was going to somehow go south to meet with a drug lord who's running his business from prison. Oh, he doesn't end up in prison. He goes there to like meet this guy who's running this drug thing. Skylar and Marie. Oh, they're going to have like a road trip for Skylar and Marie. It's like, hey, let's take the characters away from the action of the story for an extended period. That's kind of obvious why they dropped that one. Yeah. Something about they were going to bring Badger in because he knows how to use a crossbow and they were needing him to shoot something or somebody. Like, they're going to turn Badger into a bad guy.
He knows how to use a crossbow?
No, that was the idea that he would, that he's that kind of a geeky guy, that he has a crossbow and has not learned how to use it. Julian Nancy, Badger is like one of the druggies on the show, who's mostly just there for comedic.
Sorry,
effect.
I was having a Firefly moment.
Oh, yeah, the Badger character from Firefly. He was, he's a fun character.
Badger's in all kinds of things now.
Oh, the actor? Is. Yeah.
Yeah, the actor, yeah.
Wait, which Badger are we talking about?
Both, actually.
Okay, they're both in a lot of stuff
yes,
now?
Yes, Badger from Firefly and Badger from Breaking Bad. Are in quite a lot of stuff. They're good character actors. So, anyway, we'll link to this. There's like a dozen of them. Like really? They were going to do that? A plot where Junior would come home with a black eye, leading Walt to think that he's being bullied. And then he goes to confront the bully at the school and finds out that it was actually Junior who instigated the fight.
Oh.
Because he wanted to be, I guess maybe more like Hank or more of an action character. That would have given him something to do other than eat breakfast, which is mostly all Junior did. Anyway.
Or go hang out with his friend, whose name I can't remember.
Yeah, who's on the show three times or whatever. Anyway, okay, that's enough of that. That's not really news, so to speak, but it was interesting. There's all the little clips of, like, this is where the story could have gone. But they didn't.
And good, because all those sounded kind of boring.
Well, I mean, it's a paragraph description of each one. It's not...
Yeah, I guess. Well, except for Walt going down to South America. That would have been...
It's a fleshed out...
But Marie and Skylar on a road trip?
I couldn't stand having Marie and Skylar on screen together getting angry with each other for more than like one scene at a time. I wouldn't want a whole episode of that.
Would they be driving a purple car?
Maybe.
Now, wasn't Marie's car blue?
Not everything that Marie had was purple.
Why wasn't her bug purple?
I don't know. Anyway, let's jump into costume.
Costuming?
Costuming, cosplay. Ladies.
Say that word.
Nancy?
Hello. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
They checked out for a minute.
For a second.
Actually,
for a second.
Like true costumers, Nancy was showing me pictures of some very cool Elric of Melny Bonet costumes from, what was that from?
1987 WorldCon in Brighton, England.
Jeez. Okay, serious costume person.
Yeah.
1987. I was a sophomore.
I was at that convention. I am okay. That old, yes.
Don't tell us that you're not like born yet or something like
that.
No. I feel really bad. So.
I was a sophomore in high school.
Oh, okay. I don't feel so bad.
I'm not that young. I'm not that old. But did you notice when I tried to draw them back into the conversation, I said, ladies, that's a Dimitri Martin thing. the comic Dimitri Martin says, you can make any sentence dirty just by adding the word ladies to the end of it. Mike, say something.
Something.
Okay. Say a sentence.
Okay. I'm going to mow the lawn now.
Ladies.
Ooh, what's mow the lawn mean?
Right. And it's a euphemism all of a sudden. Anywho, costume stuff. Talk. What's your background in costume and cosplay and costuming?
Well, I guess I can start at part of the beginning, other than as a little girl dressing up. We were saying just before the show that goes back to one of your original podcasts about the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That's where it started for you?
Yeah. Ex-boyfriend took me on a date in 1978. A few months after it had started, he'd gone and seen it, took me, and I wanted to go to the front row. And ultimately met all the people in the front row who were in the science fiction club at UWM in Milwaukee.
Sure.
And
then the spiral just took off.
Oh, big time. to the point where we, for XCon that next year in 79, we wanted to do a recreation of the chestburster scene from Alien.
Oh, okay.
In the con suite, we did. I wanted a jumpsuit. My mother went, there's the sewing machine. Because she wasn't going to start sewing.
That's a supportive mom.
Yeah, here's a sewing machine. I'll show you how to thread it.
Get to work.
Get to work, yeah. In fact, the picture I sent you of the of me as Columbia was taken by my parents.
So you know, for this kind of gets back to something you said right at the beginning. Somebody, I don't remember which one of you guys said, where are we? So Nancy and I are in Milwaukee. And I mean, I don't know if everybody knows, but we have this great old theater, the Oriental, and it still to this day shows Rocky Horror, what is it, once a month?
Something like once a
month.
And
always has a live cast. I mean, so I think it's either the only one or one of two theaters in the whole United States that still shows Rocky Horror. You know, continually with a live cast.
When I was there in college, it was weekly, and it was at the time the longest running continuous cast in the world.
Yes.
Like there was the same, it had been the same organization of rotate, you know, people had rotated through, but it had never changed kind of like the group never stopped and then restarted. It was this one ongoing continuous thing. But I think that's changed. I think they,
the original group was us.
Yeah. So and Nancy is the original. She's the original Columbia.
But then, about 2 years after we were doing it, a bunch came up from Chicago.
Okay.
And kind of weeded their way in. And some things happened and they actually
Mike's making dirty look faces.
They actually did lock us into the dressing room in the basement.
What? So you couldn't get out and do the show?
No, afterwards. It's afterwards? Like we almost got locked in.
Now,
night. And it was just like, we're like, you know what? You guys want to play that kind of dirty pool? Have it. We did our 2 year run.
So while you were locked in, down there, you had like some sort of an epiphany like characters in sitcoms do when they're locked in storerooms.
We figured out how to take the pins out of the door. Luckily, the door opened that direction.
Oh my God.
We're like, wait, we can do this. Okay. That's where we're like, okay, you know, you guys do whatever you want.
But how did I even meet you?
Gaming.
At the gaming store. And then I got asked to help with the Gen Con costume contest, and that's sort of a long story. But then I asked Nancy. I knew Nancy was involved in costuming, so then I asked Nancy to come and help.
Celebration 2.
So then we got invited to do the costume contest at Celebration 2 from
Lucasfilm. Which is a big Star Wars convention.
Right. Yeah. And Nancy said to me, well, we have to wear costumes. So I had been for a couple years just helping behind the scenes because I sew a little bit. I mean, you know, not anything fancy. And I was helping with this costume contest. And then Nancy says, well, we got to have costumes. She decided to make Jedi costumes for all of us. So that was my first costume. And it was like a total replica of an Obi-Wan from Episode 1. And I still have it, and it's gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. She hand dyed the silk, and you know, once you do it once, and especially a group like that where we were all dressed the same, it was so much fun. I've never looked back.
When you say Obi-Wan from Episode One,
yeah, it was sort of like cross dressing.
Okay, but like the white outfit that he had when he was a Padawan.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Episode Four, Mike. Mike was looking at me kind of like funny, like which Obi-Wan. Episode One, Episode Four.
No, it was because Celebration Ewan Two. McGregor.
Yes, you and McGregor, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Celebration Two was right before that movie was coming out.
Yeah. Okay.
So we had costumes for the movie that was about to come out 2 weeks later. So we made them ahead of time,
and then Ashley just even copied at the movie theater in Milwaukee because we'd started. That was part of the snowball off of going back to the 70s was. Doing Rocky Horror, meeting the people in the Science Fiction Club and the Star Trek Club. And then part of them got asked about, from the Marcus Corporation, the local theater chain, to costume for Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Okay. So to show up at, to show up at, you know, on movie night.
To show up on the debut.
Right.
Yeah. To kind of give a, you know, little extra ambiance to their lobby. and then they had us do Empire Strikes Back.
It's okay, not to be stupid or anything, but back in the day, Nancy, because we're so old. I mean, there wasn't an internet. I mean, when we've made these other costumes, like we'll talk later, but Nancy and I have done extensive research on the internet to see costumes and like action figures and stuff ahead of the movie so we could make the costumes. But how did you do that for like Star Trek the Motion Picture? How did you know what the costumes are going to look like?
Starlog magazine.
Oh, there you go. Fan mags. Oh,
fan mags. Yeah. Magazines.
Because where you get like the news item now that comes up on the internet and says, hey, first look at such and such a movie. You had to be a subscriber to the right magazine for that 25 years ago. Cinefantastique, Fangoria, for the horror fans.
Yep, I have a whole lot of those magazines still because that was how you did it. And in fact, Star Trek, they let us watch the movie. They get the print of the movie and then they run it that night. You know, the night before to make sure the print is okay. And they had us come in and watch that.
Before it was really?
And I was doing Ilea, you know, bald Ilea with the short little outfit, and there were no pictures of the back of her outfit. We're watching the movie, she turns around and goes, oh, it's heart shaped. I went home that night at like 3 a.m. and recut my costume.
Oh my god.
To make it, I had gone straight across. I just made an assumption. Okay, it'll go straight across. This stupid standing collar, but it was a heart shape. So yeah, I cut it down and restitched stuff.
dork, geek. Wow.
Okay, so magazine subscriptions. See the movie before anyone else does.
And have a lot of free time on your hands.
Yeah, stay up all night. Okay, instead of Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and
yeah. Being a fan of things was hard back in the day.
The only way to get now you could watch the movie and take images off the screen. You used to have to take a camera in, and take pictures
during the movie.
No flash photography, please.
Oh, no flash. Yeah. Or just
hope you get well enough lit screen.
Yeah.
Or you really hope that you got to know the projectionist and if the film broke or you just happened to cut a frame out. if you offered the right kind of money, they would. I'm like, I'm not offering that kind of money.
Whoa. It was a
poor broke college projectionist. Student.
That's serious fandom.
Nancy, Craig, when you asked me to kind of talk to you about costumes, I thought, okay, there's no way I can do this without Nancy because I am just, I call myself, I'm like a walking hanger or whatever, a walking mannequin. And luckily Nancy, I don't know really why, I love her. She loves to make costumes for me to wear. So, I don't have as many great stories as she does.
Well, things like,
that was quite the sell.
Cause we started doing all these other, movies then, and we even did Zorro the Gay Blade and went afterwards to Chi Chi's
in your costume.
In costume.
Oh, that didn't raise a few eyebrows.
and specifically when and we were a Zorro party of six.
And then you looked like him.
Six Zorros. Or was it all characters from...
No, it was all characters.
The whole band of characters from the movie.
We had Zorro. I was Esteban. Strapped the boobs in. Because there weren't enough female characters.
I dress up as guys. Like, I have a Lucius Malfoy costume that Nancy made for me. And then Gerard dresses as Snape. And those costumes look great. And we went to the Harry Potter exhibit in Chicago in our costumes. And everybody thought we were part of the exhibit. They were so good. So Nancy makes, you know, I just want people to be clear. Nancy makes, they're like exact replicas of what's in the movies. They're amazing and they're fun to wear. And so the next exploit for me and Gerard is going to be, we're going to Universal Studios in Florida. And we're trying to decide if we should wear our Snape and Malfoy costumes when we go or not. So the other fun thing about being a friend of Nancy, F-O-N, is that sometimes she'll describe a costume and I'll say, hey, where's that? Like, she started to describe she made the Mars Attacks dress. And I'm like, ooh,
oh, I need to see this dress. The painted on
Yeah, dress. You saw that dress.
On,
right, Craig, you saw me in that dress, didn't you, at Gen Con?
I don't Maybe remember. Not.
But
all the swirls.
She dragged it out of the basement and it fit me, I think, pretty well. And I wore it a couple times. It's very fun. So this starts to get into that aspect, what you guys were asking earlier, like cosplay costuming. So, I mean, we definitely think of ourselves as costumers. And but when I wear mostly any costume, I try to be somewhat in character. I think that's a part of it. You know, like especially if I'm wearing the Mars Attacks girl, I walk super smoothly so that because when the movie, she's on roller skates or something. She like doesn't move. She slides.
And then all of her arm movements are very fluid.
So I move my hands in that way. And then she chews gum. So I'm always chewing gum. And then she just says like, ack, 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 ack. And I just walk around the convention doing that. So I guess, you know, you could call that cosplay. I mean, it would look stupid if I stood there as myself in this dress. People get a huge kick out of it.
If you stick in the costume, somebody comes up to you and says, can I take
it? What is that? What is that? And then when I go by and I say, ack, ack, they just crack up. They just love it. And that's a whole part of the experience. So I feel like when I'm doing that, I'm adding to the atmosphere of the con. People love it. I'm having fun. So I guess that's sort of cosplay. But
it's what we used to call acting or just, you know,
being in character. I never heard the term cosplay. So you guys heard that Nancy kind of brought me in by making a couple costumes for me and I'm having a great time. But I always thought of it as wearing costumes. I never heard the term cosplay for years.
Right. And it's just the term that has become common particularly for people who are.
That coined in 1984.
84.
With a Japanese reporter who attended the World Science Fiction Convention in Los Angeles, and upon seeing what the Americans were all doing, termed it costume play.
Right.
And then the term went away for a really long time. So it kind of came back in anime fandom.
Right.
I think of cosplay as much more a part of anime. And so now...
Depending on what definition you give to each of them, it can be equals. It can be the exact same thing.
I mean,
I think that with this show on Sci-Fi Channel, which I know, Craig, you said you saw a couple episodes of Heroes of Cosplay. I definitely think that people are going to start to use the term cosplay a lot more than they ever used to in our circles anyway.
Right. Because you know, ostensibly, it's really just there's being in a costume and then there's
guys, we lost our hearing you guys.
Uh-oh.
OK, back.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, Mike, you cut that out. Because cosplay really, I mean, it's come to mean not just the costume, but also, you know, playing the character and embodying that thing. And you see, like in the show, in Heroes of Cosplay, there are people who are more concerned with the craft of the costumes and the props and everything. And then there are other people who are more concerned with the performance, with making a show out of it.
And the thing is that this is all been covered, everybody up to this point, outside of those people, call yourselves costumers.
Right, you know, like there's a
what
world
we've been doing for decades.
Right, it's just semantics.
And
It's just it's a term that's come into play.
It's a new, kitschier, more, you know, young sounding.
Sure. It doesn't sound like, oh, it's a person who just sits at a sewing machine and makes clothes.
Yeah. Well, then you'd be calling yourself a seamstress. Versus a tailor. Versus I call myself a costumer, more because it's not that I can't make regular pants.
But you don't.
It's that I prefer not to make regular
pants. You prefer to make old-timey pants.
Or
future pants.
There you go. Silver lame future pants.
Something much more interesting than, oh, look, can you make me some blue jeans? Can't you go to a store and buy blue jeans?
Yeah, but you can buy a lot of these costumes, too. Or, of course, it's going to, you know, it's the cheap, not-so-great, you know, mass-marketed version of things. Boo, oh, look at you. Getting all elitist.
Yeah. Well, actually, even if you're part of the Rebel Alliance or
Star Wars Rebel Alliance,
the 501st,
Mike's just looking at me. The 501st is the national, or I guess international, organization of stormtroopers. When they, you see these big parades actually, isn't it?
Well, in order to be in the 501st, you have to have a Empire costume that you have made yourself, and then the Rebel Alliance, you have to have a Rebellion costume that you have made yourself.
Okay, so it's the greater Empire. But whenever you see the huge, you know, piles of stormtroopers marching in a parade, that's the 501st.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I get a kick out of the fact that our group was doing that shit long before that existed. You know, it was really funny because it's like, we were doing that before you guys, but that's okay.
No, but I think it's really cool because they, like, just
they
this
kind of
weekend.
People sentient, you know, by knowing, getting to talk to each other.
Right,
you know?
It gets people together.
Costume fandom, realized, looking back at stuff, I'd forgotten about the fact that everybody decided that it was pretty much a deadvention in, like, 79, where costume fandom became sentient because they started talking to each other.
Oh,
yeah. Instead of your competition, and I can't talk to you.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the indication I got from watching Heroes of Cosplay, that outside of a few incidents, it's just a big community.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you show up, you're in costume, other people in costume, you admire their costume, they admire yours, you all say some great things, you talk about the show or the movie or the whatever, and you Absolutely. And you dig on that for a weekend, and then you go back and work at an office or do whatever you do. Yeah.
Exactly.
I have no problem with that. I do that with gaming all the time.
Well, and you used to do that at Ren Fair.
True. Nancy made my costume. Mike, do you know that?
The costume that I haven't seen.
Yeah. Well, I think I might have shown you a picture. We just didn't put it on the internet.
Oh.
Forever. There's photos of me in that costume out there. But yeah, the blue velvet quilt.
I don't remember.
As I lovingly came to call it, because it was in fact blue velvet, it was velveteen.
Was it toasty?
And it was actually quilted. The doublet portion of it was quilted, and yes, it was warm.
Yeah, and then
it was fully lined, and then with the double row of silver buttons, that the buttonholes were so tight.
Yes, and it wasn't just decorative buttons with hooks underneath to clasp everything. I had to button like 24 buttons to put that thing on, because it was a double row, two buttons wide, all the way down the front.
Yeah,
that was ridiculous. I don't know why we did that.
It looked great.
Really good. But
that's why.
Ooh, it took a long time to take that doublet off.
It took you longer to get dressed than some of the women, and they had to get laced up in both a corset and a bodice.
Yeah, I had a lot of buttons.
And all the sleeves.
And then I had to tie my sleeves on and tie the sleeves up because the sleeves were all
removable. Was there any boning?
There was no boning in it.
No.
No, wait a minute. You mean in the costumes or among the cast?
Hey, oh.
Oh.
Jeez.
Because there was both, but not in my costume. It was quilted, but there was no whalebone or metal or anything like that in it. And I had a cape too, a black velvet cape.
And then
that I'd forgotten about.
Yeah, you made that the second year. I didn't have that my first year.
And you're wearing that in August in Wisconsin, right? So it's about 90 degrees and 90%. Yeah.
It was awesome. All day long.
Because
for 10 hours.
Because back in the time period that Bristol Renaissance Fair is set in.
1574.
They were having a mini ice age. And so this was all
England was very cold at the time.
Can one of you explain to me why it is that this Renaissance fair where you're wearing these clothes designed for a mini ice age and it's timed during the 2 weeks in Wisconsin when it's the hottest and the most humid?
Well, for one thing,
it's summer. It's when people have time to go.
Yeah, and the Ren Fair.
But why not June when it's still like 70?
It would start the last week of June usually.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't just August.
No, June end of June to all the way through August.
Okay,
9 weeks.
And now it starts just after 4th of July because they weren't getting as many people because of Summerfest.
Right, because it conflicted with Summerfest, and then they push it later too, because now it hits Labor Day weekend, and they do the 3-day weekend.
Yeah. And now they overlap 2 weeks with the Minnesota Fair, because there's also fairs in all these other places, and you kind of have to figure out, you know, who will come to your fair versus, you know, if there's two fairs within driving distance, which one will they go to?
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of
market. You share them, right? You share a fan base, a patron base.
And there are people who do travel.
Right. For somebody who lives in the middle of Wisconsin, they have to decide, are they going to go over to Minneapolis or are they going to go down to Kenosha?
Yeah. And sometimes we've lucked out lately that there have been some nice just 70-degree days. And it's kind of like, oh, it's finally nice. And putting the sleeves on isn't going to make me pass out.
But you'd see it every day out at fair. There's a little golf cart. if you saw a golf cart driving with anybody other than guys in khakis and white shirts, you knew that other person was somebody that went down from the heat.
And where in Kenosha is it?
It's right on the freeway just before, right on, what is it, I-95, right before you get to the Illinois border.
Oh, okay.
It's on the west side of the road.
Okay.
It is part of the township of Bristol.
Oh, okay.
So it's basically halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago. I don't know how many Chicago people come up, but the other thing is
we have two Nancy's... Chicago listeners.
What?
We have two Chicago listeners.
Ah.
Maybe.
So
Kevin and Rachel, hope you're listening.
So Nancy's been involved in Renaissance Fair since forever and used to work there. So here's my question, because I think of myself as still more of a newcomer. And so I don't have a Renaissance costume, but Nancy has made many things for me. One of which is a group. We have a group of Lord of the Rings costumes. And so we wore all of our Lord of the Rings costumes to Renaissance Fair. So is that frowned upon because we weren't in the era? But I've done that, and we've gone with all of our Hogwarts costumes there as a group. People love taking pictures of us. I think it's looser now than it used to be, right?
Well, I think, yes, there was a time when it was more like, you know, if you're going to the Renaissance Fair and you're going in costume, you're going in Renaissance garb. And then the people who went as something else were a little bit kind of the outliers. But I think it's much more common now. And even Bristol is now the place, as the slogan for the fair now is where fantasy rules.
Right. So now they have like on different weekends, like there's a steampunk weekend and there's a fantasy weekend, and it's
and
fun.
There's always people there who are there, you know, like on Jim's episode, he mentioned the Vikings, the two guys that would always show up in Viking garb who are there every weekend.
Yeah.
There's other people who do that too, that show up in a particular costume all the time. And,
or even like pirates. There's a lot of pirates.
Right. And Jim made the comment, if it gets people in the gates, it's all good.
Because Bristol started off originally as King Richard's Fair. And it was more fantasy. And they had wizards. And the Hobbit Hole, which has ultimately been kind of destroyed.
It just wasn't maintained.
Well, didn't Peter Jackson take it and put it on his property?
Yes, that's exactly what he did. It's in his backyard now.
It's his guest house.
But yeah, I mean, it evolved over time, and then it went very historical. And for a period there, I think it was, you know, one of the most historical, you know, historically accurate and very respected, and one of the, you know, really solid in that history aspect of things. And now it's embraced with, you know, the Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter stuff and all the other kind of costuming and cosplay categories, subcategories. It started to, it embraces more of that stuff.
See, and what I like about that is the open aspect of it. I like that you see little kids dressed up, you see families, you know, you see old people, young people, whatever. And that's what I like about, for instance, the costume contest that I'm the most involved in, which is the Gen Con costume contest, where I'm the MC. And it's all about just having fun and, you know, new people, you know, who want to just try it. And it's very open. And I think that's kind of what I get concerned at when I see the show Heroes of Cosplay. I think they make it seem so exclusive and so competitive and these huge cash prizes. And, you know, that's really not, to me, what costuming is all about. It's about having fun, going to Ren Faire. You know, even at Gen Con, you don't have to be a super professional to be in the costume contest.
Well, and I think some of the costume things that contests they were showing have not embraced the what costumers finally pushed for, which was categories of expertise.
Right.
That most of the conventions I've gone to have novice, journeyman, master.
Sure. So that you can go in
person and does not have to be going, oh my God, I have to compete against them for one prize, best in show. And at times there has been a journeyman or a novice has won best in show over a master.
I'm gonna let you in on a little secret. That was a TV show. So they needed to create spectacle and drama. And that's why it was Yahya Han and who is Mike's like, who's that? Like the face of cosplay. She's one of these people that doesn't even compete anymore. She just gets invited to judge. Mm-hmm. She gets like her conventions paid for and she makes costumes and she's got a whole branded thing. And she sells stuff and the whole deal.
Well, yeah.
And then there's a handful of other people that are all these really, you know, high level. They do a lot of crazy model work and prop work and really, you know, they spend days and days making things.
What? And the thing is they're showing more that it's like, it's not just the props. You really do need a costume to go with it.
And they do the costume and stuff on there, but you know, that's not as showy as like when the guys or the girls made they had their friends over and they made the dragon boat from How I Trained Your Dragon.
See, at least they give credit to their friends. We were all
watching the movie, Mike.
The show going and it's like, and you're just like, your boyfriend helped. Can't you at least give him credit? Because with Julie's White Witch costume, Gerard made that crown and the staff. That crown is phenomenal. I'm not taking credit for that. He did it.
Well, they told the judges that they had friends come over to make that thing.
No, they with that thing, but
some of the previous ones, didn't.
Victoria never gave credit to her boyfriend.
Well,
and then he proposed. I can't believe I smacked
him. Yeah.
Sucker.
Sucker, no kidding. And he looked at me doing a big chunk.
And wasn't she the one who couldn't get a costume done on time to save her life?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Through the course of the show. She actually missed one of the conventions completely. She missed the competition because she couldn't get the costume finished in time. She was in her hotel room at the convention finishing her costume and couldn't finish it.
Granted, I have sat in a hotel room. I have sat on a tour.
I get that, but she did it every single time.
And you know, if
every
she was
single
smart,
convention she went to, she was working on her costume to the last minute. Time management, sister. rein it in a little bit and get it done on time, so that you can go to the convention.
Start a day earlier.
Yeah, so you can go to the convention and actually enjoy the convention. You know, this community that you're building, so you can go out and hang around and see everybody else's stuff and go to the panels and get autographs and all that other stuff. Yeah, you know, she never got to do any of that stuff because she was in her, you know, and
of course,
did she win anything?
The problem is, was she getting paid to, oh yeah, she did actually finish one that fell apart.
Right, the one there, the headpiece fell.
The one where she complained about beadwork. Oh, I hate doing beads. And I'm looking away. There's like 20 beads on that thing.
Oh,
beaded an entire dress. You know, I've beaded a dress from shoulder to hip.
You are an elitist. You're a bead leadist. 20 beads. Pshaw.
I am a worshiper of Queen Glitziana. I love people beads. Flash Gordon, favorite movie. Horrible movie. Love the movie.
Love the costumes.
Love the costumes.
Nancy?
Hello?
Yes.
Julie? Okay. Just making sure you didn't walk away to look at more pictures.
Well, no, now I think we were planning the costumes we're going to wear at Nancy's wedding.
Yeah. We keep debating.
Oh, here we go. Weddings in costume. Dork.
Yes.
Dork. Geek. Nerd.
So I want to know, so Nancy has an idea of something she wants to wear. It's a dress she's been working on for since I've known her. It's a leather Native American, what do you call it?
Well, I sent you, did you get the pictures?
Mm-hmm. We're going, yep. We'll post some photos.
That white, it's a three-hide style Lakota dress. I may wear, but my boobs don't fit in it anymore decently.
Uh-oh. Maybe it fits me. No. But
Or Glenn has actually mentioned the Aztec Techno Tribal.
To get married in.
To get married
but
in.
But I
Aztec
Techno Tribal.
That's okay. Another
what's,
picture.
What's Tech?
That was another picture? The thing is that with Heroes Cosplay kind of show was just more the media recreation. I don't care what media you're talking about. It's just media recreation. And at least the two gals, which I can't remember their names, who did their gaming.
Their gaming characters.
Gaming characters.
Oh, yeah. Holly and Victoria?
No. Becky?
I can't
remember.
Yeah.
I remember Holly because she was cute. Sorry.
They were kind of like worried. In fact, it's an original idea. Well, original ideas used to reign at science fiction conventions, and media costumes were poo-pooed.
Right, because it wasn't an original idea. You weren't using your own creativity. You were just copying something.
Right, and the fact that at the time period, it was a lot of bathrobe Lukes. Hey, look, Princess Leia, it's a
I've got a white bathrobe and a yellow wiffle ball bat. I'm Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, and there's only so many of those you could take, and as the media things have gotten
There's a modern day version of that too, of the cheap and easy costume. It's something I saw a few times too many a few years back when Battlestar Galactica was big. Anytime you went to Gen Con or Dragon Con or whatever, you'd see people in the
backwards tank top,
right? The backwards race racerback tee, black and gray, with gray pants, and they would be a Viper pilot out of the flight suit, in just the pants and tee, everywhere you went. And I didn't notice it at first until Emily, who has been on the show, pointed out, said, "Hey, Craig, start counting how many of these you see," and then I couldn't stop seeing them. Everywhere I looked, people were in that costume because you could make it for $30.
Right. The original idea, though, costume is still heavy in science fiction fandom. But my Aztec Techno Tribal, I said that because that is an example of, came out of the top of my head. I'd been going to summer, Indian Summer Festival.
Here in
the
Milwaukee.
Festival, right.
And for 2 years, we had actually volunteered, and we got put to help on the international dance stage. And there's a group out of Madison that does Aztec dance. And they would show me how they did their headdresses.
How did they know how Aztecs dance?
Because some of these people, there was also a Mexican group. So in other words, this is stuff passed down.
No, I mean,
from generation to generation. It's like going to a powwow.
Okay, I suppose.
It's their native peoples.
Yeah, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe this is just my breathtaking ignorance of other cultures. but, there's Native American tribes in North America that are continuous in their reservations. The culture is still very strong. They're preserving the tribes. Is there that type of thing in the Aztec world? Are there people who are native
descendants of Aztecs?
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Are you thinking of the Mayans?
Well, the Mayans are gone.
That's okay. Why. Yeah, maybe that's what you're thinking of.
I was mixing them up like you do when you have breathtaking ignorance of other people's cultures like me. Jeez.
Well, I mean, yeah, there are vestiges of all of those cultures.
Right. And there's records of things, and I get that. But it's just, I don't know. I guess I assumed that some stuff like that gets lost to time. Especially in cultures that don't have a written language.
Well, stories
across the world, but yeah, right. The stories get passed down, but then the stories change because every storyteller puts their spin on the story, unless it's a really strong tradition of keeping it exact. Because sometimes the culture has that going on too, where there's no variation. Like the story that you hear now is probably the same story that people heard 400 years ago.
Because they did memorize it.
Right, they memorized exactly how it was told.
Yeah. But yeah, they showed how they make those headdresses because they use 5-foot pheasant feathers. And how do you fit this into a car?
How do you fit that under the little white trellis with all the little lace, you know, like whatever you're going to...
For the wedding.
Yeah. Anything you're going to walk not under, anything that's less than 12 feet tall?
You're going to have the gazebo raised.
Well, I'm only 5 foot two, so, and I'm using ostrich feathers.
Okay, not quite
so
as bad.
So it only makes me about 7 feet tall.
You're not a 10 foot tall peacock.
No. But yeah, Glenn even talked about wearing his, and it's like, ooh, wait a minute. Because he always joked, I could wear whatever I wanted. He was going to wear blue jeans and t-shirt and tennis shoes. Because that was probably the biggest reason. We've been going together since 1982.
And he finally got around to getting you a ring, huh?
No.
Good job, Glenn. Have I met Glenn? I may have.
You may have.
The Aztec picture is of both of them. So,
okay.
So, yeah, because I have dragged him into costume many times. I have dragged so many of my friends.
Actually, they bought each other Slytherin rings. No, I'm sorry, Lord of the Rings. Oh my God, slap my mouth. This is the Lord of the Rings, the Aragorn ring. So they're wearing those as their special.
Although my mother offered me her original wedding band, so.
But no, you'd rather wear a pretend ring from a movie about magic.
But we both love it. Wait, the
That's fine. That's fine.
We've got 3 generations of geek going in this family, so. Yeah, because even, you know, Julie talking about, you know, little kids dressing up, I made a little half-circle cape for my grandson when we went to Ren Faire this year. And at first he had it on. Then they went in and bought him a little wooden sword.
Oh.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, he wanted a shield.
Cool.
But he had an axe because they didn't have a shield he liked. And all the way home, he's discussing how he wants to decorate up this plain axe, this little wooden axe. Because, yeah, he'll go around with a lantern at night being, you know, one of the hobbits or one of the dwarves.
Yeah. Yes. As Jim would say, that's one of ours. Being raised right.
I keep getting the best grandma ever. Well, at 2, we gave him a lightsaber. We took bets on, made a lightsaber and a Jedi cloak. He first opened the cloak and, you know, what kids will do with clothing, pitched it until his dad held it up. And then he just like naturally stuck his arms in it, put the hood up, and started posing with the little red lightsaber.
Oh, my God.
Of course, and then we took bets. Yes, it was less than 2 minutes before he smacked his dad. Yeah, guess where?
There.
Oh, no.
Well, it's if he was, I'll guess where. First, tell me whether or not the dad was standing or kneeling.
Standing.
Took it in the crotch. If he was kneeling, he would have taken it in the face. That's the only 2 places kids know how to hit you.
Mm-hmm.
He'd swing that sword around and nail him right in the face if he was on a knee.
Although you do have to know his middle name is Anakin.
Oh.
Grandma went out on that one, too.
Wow. Wow. My middle name is Alan.
That's Glenn's middle name. They wanted the same initials, but they didn't want to do, because Glenn and his son are both Glenn, but they're not junior. Because they've got different middle names. So they decided with Gage to go. They went with Gage. They needed an A. And I just kept pushing Anakin.
You know, that's just, you do know that's just wrong.
Apollo could be Apollo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aragorn.
There you go.
Oh, see? But yeah, no, he does. He watched the Clone Wars. He loves Walking Dead.
And apparently, from what you told me the other day, you have to make little frosting eyeballs on all of his cakes or something.
Yes.
Because he likes to eat eyeballs.
Yeah.
I don't quite get that.
Yeah, because his cake, when he turned five was, or was when, no, when he turned six, he had the Walking Dead, and he had to eat the eyes of the zombies.
Jeez. Yeah, you were mentioning this before we pressed the record button, that this this 7-year-old kid's watching The Walking Dead, and you haven't seen it.
Right. Although I did get to help, his outfit this year is the leather vest with the angel wings.
He's a little Daryl.
Yes, he is.
Daryl's vest has angel wings on the back.
His
is he going to grow his hair really long so that it's hanging in front of his face? And
yeah, they might have done that. They may have done that with him.
You haven't seen him lately to see how long his hair is?
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, tell him that he can't cut his hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has to be hanging in his eyes.
They may have done that. But yeah, last year I got the surprise of quick. He was doing like the Hulk, you know, one of those little bot costumes. And then I get two of his friends wanted to go trick-or-treating as Luke and Leia. His girlfriend was Leia. So I had to quick make a Han Solo costume for him.
Oh, that's so great.
Quick, make a Han Solo costume. Uh-huh. Now, admittedly, we're probably talking the black pants, white shirt, black vest.
We're talking
the episode 4 outfit.
Episode 5, because it was a jacket.
The Cloud City outfit, the blue jacket.
Yeah, and yes, I did do the all the zigzagging. I did him a blood stripe on those pants that I made. Wow. And he got the little crossover shirt. It wasn't just a t-shirt.
Oh
yeah. And he had all the pockets on the jacket. In fact, he put that on. He wouldn't take it off.
Did it have a heart-shaped back?
No.
What was Han Solo's back look like in there? Did you get the back right?
Yeah, there's the pockets on the back.
Okay.
There is a pocket on the back of that. Yes. Hey, the back of costumes is really important. I mean, we
best grandma ever.
We made Nancy made my husband and I Mon Mothma and Bail Organa from episode 2 or 3. God, I'm losing track. 3. And again, before the movie came out, and all the reference photos that we could find only had the fronts. And so we're at the premiere of the movie, and Bail, it's this big blue, it looks like a big long blue cloak that Bail Organa is wearing, Jimmy Smits, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, he turns around. There's a completely like unimportant scene for about 2 seconds where he turns around, and we can see the back of his costume. And again, this idea that we didn't know it, and so we cut the back as a curve, and he turns around, and it was a point with a tassel on the back, and we all went, and I think half the people around us were like, what's happening? What?
And there was something back.
Is there a Sith Lord? Did a Sith Lord just appear? Is there going to be a fight? What?
And then later, Gerard and I went to see the real costumes at an exhibit in Los Angeles, and the real Bale costume was there, but it was in a corner in the dark, and we couldn't see the back. So we got a security guard to open up a door so light would go on the back of the costume so we could see exactly how the back of the costume was made, and then we did recut the back of his costume to make it perfect.
Oh,
and it's in
man.
The movie from like 50 feet away. It's in the movie for about a half a second.
And then worse, the Mon Mothma costume is like not even there.
Yeah, the Mon Mothma costume is only in the cutscenes that you can see on the extended DVD.
And you know, the great part about that story is that's not the first time that security guard has been asked to get a look at the backside of something or something that's not, you know, quite visible or lit well. You were not the first people to ask him to do that. Because it's you people that show up at those places and go nuts over that stuff. It's not just the regular public might. Can they walk in, take a look around? But you hardcore costume people.
So you need to see the tassel, don't do you? Okie dokie then.
Take out the keys.
yep.
Well, but it was after that Mon Mothma costume. Oh, well, and then also the Arwen costume that's in for a heartbeat.
Yeah.
That we decided with the White Witch, we waited till the movie premiered to make sure it really is in the movie.
Oh. But that White Witch costume is amazing, and Nancy spent a lot of time, but it is really made exactly the way they made it in the movie, because there's a making of DVD that you can see.
And Julie actually went to a farm.
I went to a farm
and met the sheep that and wool roving came off.
We took the wool, and then Nancy hand felted an entire. I'm wearing like 3 or 4 layers on that dress. There's the wool felting that you did by hand. There's the satin underdress, right? Yeah. And then there's the
the
main
lace,
the lacy part on the top. So I don't. I hope you're going to post that photo. But it would take us an hour just to describe how she made that overdress. It's amazing.
Just when I thought you guys couldn't get darkier, I went and met the sheep that made my costume for me. Wow.
The only thing we don't have is a picture of the sheep.
Aww.
I know.
I would have put that in the documentation.
Yeah. So, I mean,
when you go to the costume contest, it's like, and this is the sheep. Got a picture that provided wool.
I have a book, a little like report on the making of the costume because that costume went to Costume Con and it won the best in show.
Ooh, so we have an award winner on the show.
Yeah, that white one. It's an amazing, and that's the one that Gerard made my crown, which again took weeks. He sculpted in clay the shape of the White Witch's crown, and then we made a mold out of rubber, and then, you know, had to put resin in the rubber and pull it out, and it took several weeks to get that crown done, and it is truly amazing.
And we have a photo of that one. Yep.
Yeah.
So all you listeners, you can look at these.
Try this at home. We encourage you.
Yes. And go to a convention and talk to other people and find out how they made their stuff and go home and improve your costuming skills.
Yeah, one of the best costume contests around is actually ArtCon. And it's technically in St. Louis. Well, it's in Collinsville, Illinois. It's across the border. It's like 11 miles out because they have... Little Collinsville has this really nice convention center, and it's one of the few science fiction conventions that gives up their main programming room from like 11 or 12 on Saturday for the costume contest.
Well, and they give it to you the night before, too, for...
For some part of the... Tech rehearsals then they do a little bit in the morning in that room, and then from that point on, it's given over to the costume contest, and you get a full tech rehearsal with full lighting. They encourage you to have your own music. They have workmanship judging, the separate where the person really, really, really does look at the costume. The green room isn't just a bunch of chairs and some water, but they have dens with dead mommies and daddies to take care of everybody. You know, if you need quick repairs, you know, they have people with safety pins and hot glue guns to...
Velcro.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Velcro.
Velcro? Well, yeah.
So it's a whole production.
Yeah. Yeah, they really take care. They're really good people. So, yeah, if anybody's looking for the best one to go see and probably, to watch, because they generally get really good customers to show up. And they have, all levels.
Same thing at Gen Con. I mean, and like I've gone to Dragon Con. That's amazing. If there's one I really would like to go to, it'd be Comic Con in San Diego with my costume. But, you know, these are heavy duty costuming cons where, you know, people are really high level, like what you see on the Heroes of Cosplay. They're pretty amazing. Gen Con is, a lot more laid back, but a lot of fun. But you don't see quite the level of costumes at Gen Con that you do at like Dragon Con, for instance.
Yeah, DragonCon is just kind of all of a sudden somehow became like this mecca to go wear your costume. I mean, to the point of having a parade in the streets.
Oh yeah, I know. that's a big deal. They shut down the roads and people come in. You know, people come in for just for the parade. They'll come down and just go watch the parade for an hour and a half. Mike raises his hand, and then they'll go home. And they won't go. They won't set foot inside the convention center, but they'll just go see the parade because it's huge. I've got photos of that somewhere, too. Maybe I can dig some of those up.
I work downtown just a few blocks away from all the hotels where they hold that. And every year on that Friday before,
you guys go out and get dinner, get lunch somewhere.
We go down there for lunch.
Watch people. Yeah.
Yep.
Because, yeah, I mean, even before the parade, if you just, you know, once Dragon Con's in full swing, you see all sorts of stuff on the street, just hang around on the street.
Oh, everybody's dressed up on Friday.
Yep. Well, Dragon Con is many things, but the costume thing is very big.
I didn't go this year.
It's one of
year.
The biggest components.
The last time I was there, Dune was huge.
Well, we're going to go next year with James.
That's right. Everybody's walking around with blue contacts.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, weirdest thing we ever saw, though. I have at least not worn my costumes on a plane. Going down to the 1986 Worldcon in Atlanta before Dragon Con existed. We had our transfer in Nashville, and I go in the bathroom. I'm like, oh, my God, guys. Shush, shush, shush. Hide. There's a woman in there dressed as a Bene Gesserit.
Oh.
Oh, no, it wasn't. That was going down to Nolicon.
As a what?
Bene Gesserit
from Dune.
Okay.
She was in
It's been a while.
Outfit.
Yeah.
Those are the female.
The priestess monk types. Holy women. Okay.
Yeah.
The gal comes out of the bathroom, though, ends up seeing Glenn's son was wearing a Buckaroo Banzai hat. It's like, oh, crap. She spotted us. Y'all go to that Worldcon.
But she was already in her costume in the airport.
We
okay, that's weird.
Had spottings of her every single day.
Don't try this now because you'd never get through TSA wearing a costume.
Can I tell the story of my embarrassing costume moment?
Sure. Yes.
Okay, really quick. When I was doing the Renaissance Fair and I had the big blue velvet quilt costume. At one point, a bunch of the people from the fair, from the court, went to Chicago for the AIDS walk. And people, different performers and groups and things would go and line the road out there for the walkers to have something to look at so that they're not just bored walking the whole time. So mm-hmm. we went out there, did that whole thing. And then we wandered up into town, and I was there for the weekend with friends and things. And at one point, we were walking from down there to where we had parked, and we were going to be going out for dinner afterwards, and I needed to get some money. I didn't have any cash on me. Now, in Wisconsin,
oh boy, I see where this is going.
15 years ago, when you had a cash machine, what was it called?
A time machine.
Yep. TYME, because it was the Time Corporation that had put those machines all over the place.
Take your money everywhere.
Yes. And so it took about asking about five different people before my friend and I realized that we were walking around in Renaissance garb asking people where we could find a time machine. And then we started asking for a cash machine, got our money, and went to dinner.
That's great.
Do they still have those up there?
TYME machines?
I don't think they call them TYME, but literally people around here do still say, where's a time machine?
I still say it. It slips out here every so often. I say that. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, are you going to get another costume anytime soon? And have we snagged Mike into being a costumer now?
Maybe. Dragon Con's coming up. You got a year. Whoa. A little less than a year.
Okay.
I got to tell you, it's so much fun to be in a costume. You should try it.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, I've dressed up as an adult for Halloween parties and
okay.
whatnot. So I get it.
I've considered it every so often, especially like in the last few years with Dragon Con being here, and I know people who do costume stuff that would help. But it's like every time
we do, we'd have to do something like a theme.
I don't know, but every time I've thought about it, and I've just started to kind of get halfway serious about it, then like some other project comes up and starts to eat up my time,
yeah.
And then it just kind of disappears to the back of my head again, and I never do anything about it.
You've got us thinking about it now, so.
So
we've got plenty of time.
We'll be very serious about it for about a month, and then we'll forget.
Well, hopefully they'll be on the show again to remind us.
That's true.
Between now
here we
and
go.
If all goes well. I think that's going to do it.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap up here.
Boy, I for one feel informed. Yes. I learned all kinds of stuff.
Thanks for coming on the show, ladies.
It was really fun. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Where can they find us, Mike?
Oh, yeah. NerdBurgerShow.com, at NerdBurgerShow on Twitter, NerdBurgerShow on Facebook, and email us, NerdBurgerShow@gmail.com.
Oh.
Is the outro sigh?
Yes. On the next episode of NerdBurger, Mike shows off his brand new Craig costume, and Craig shows off his brand new Mike costume. And we'll even do each other's voices, and it'll be indistinguishable on the podcast. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
right. We're going to roll.
We're all set.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Have a good rest of your day.
Bye. You too.
Bye.
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 Go Pack.